I wanted to address a subject that relates to how we function in relationship to God and the way we look to God and how we see Him and responding in our lives. And so I'd like to ask the question, have you ever contended with God? In that sense, not wrestling physically in some way, because we're not where God appears to us physically in that sense. But have you ever contended with God? Have you ever suffered maybe a loss that just seemed too great? The price seemed a little too high. Maybe the health issues never quite ever rose to the point of, I can deal with this, I'm okay, and it's always been a struggle. Have you ever contended with God that it just seems like what's happening is a little bit too great? It could be the loss of a family member or a dear friend. There are various things in which we might go to God and say, why? How come? You could do this. Why haven't you done this? Have you ever wrestled in that sense with God in that way? Well, the problem with that is, at some point in time, when we recognize that God is in control, He has all power, He can intervene as He chooses, He has intervened in some ways, we want to say, well, then why didn't you intervene in the other ones? And at some point in time, we can begin to be unsettled, and that unsettling can even turn into anger. What happens when we get angry with God? Anger oftentimes is a response to our desire to be in control. Isn't it interesting that something that's really irritating is not being in control? It really irritates us. Imagine the golfer. And you've seen the cartoons, but these are real events sometimes. Golfer goes out, gets so frustrated, he takes his iron and he bends it on a tree. Or I've seen him smack it on the ground and break an iron right there. Now think about that. Is the golfer actually angry at the iron? I mean, everybody knows only God can hit a 3-iron anyway, so it's not like our expectation should be that high, but is he actually angry at the iron? Or is he angry at the tree? He hits a tree. Is he angry at the tree? No, he's not. He's angry because he wasn't able to be in sufficient control to do what he wanted to do, and he takes it out on whatever it is that he has access to. In that sense, a lot of times, anger is our frustration or our irritation on not being able to be fully in control of some event or circumstance, some person, some incident. Look at Jonah. I want to start this in the book of Jonah, chapter 3. Jonah got angry, and he got angry because he wasn't basically in control. And I think we know the story of the book, but I want to read at least chapter 3. It's a short book, and this is a short chapter. But it starts out, the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time. First time, his response was incorrect. The word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time. Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you. So Jonah rose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a 3-day journey in extent. Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk. Then he cried out and said, yet 40 days, Nineveh shall be overthrown. So the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. Word came to the king of Nineveh. He arose from his throne, laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Don't let them eat or drink water. But let man and beast be covered with sackcloth and cry mightily to God. Yes, let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not perish? Then God saw their works, and they turned from their evil way, and God relented of the disaster which he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. And it displeased Jonah exceedingly. Jonah was very, very upset. He became angry. Not with Nineveh, with God. Nineveh repented. Jonah didn't want Nineveh to repent. Do you know why? Because Jonah's people were going to go into captivity to Nineveh if they remained a power and a strength. Imagine that your children, possibly, or your children's children, if you knew that they were going to be abused or taken captive or in some way traumatized by someone that would remain at large over which you had no control. And I think that was at least part of what Jonah's anger was about. And God says, well, shouldn't I pity Nineveh? And basically, Jonah's answer was, no. No, I don't think so. And Jonah disagreed with God, and he became very angry. So basically, God's answer to Jonah is, are you angry because I am doing good? It's understandable to be angry in that sense, it's sin. But imagine when we become angry with God because in his supremacy, in his perfect knowledge, he sent Judah and Israel into captivity, it says, for their own good. It was actually so that he could turn and use them and restore them and bless them in another day and also fulfill his purpose and plan. You know, Judah went into captivity, and when they came out of captivity, they did not return to Jerusalem. Only a few of them returned to Jerusalem. When they came out of captivity, they scattered throughout the empire of the day, and they set up in all the different trading cities, and they built synagogues. When the time came for the gospel to go into all the world, and the apostles were going out, and Paul was going out, he could go out, and in Athens, and in Corinth, and in the cities throughout the Roman Empire of the day, there were Jews in synagogues, and there was a place where they could go and begin to preach. There was a place where God could begin to call people to assemble who knew the Sabbath, who knew the holy days, who knew the law of God, but they simply didn't know that Jesus Christ had died for their sins. So God's plan sometimes goes far beyond our ability to comprehend it. God's plan with Nineveh certainly was far beyond what Jonah could comprehend. But he became angry with God because in that sense, it took him out of control. When we become angry with God, brethren, it becomes a very great risk to our own spiritual focus. It becomes a risk to our own health. In talking and giving this sermon, in one of the members came up to me afterwards when I, again this morning, and mentioned something that had happened in their lives that was very traumatic, went way back many years, and they said, I just can't forgive them for those things. She said, I think it's gone sometimes. I think I'm at peace. And then something happens and it brings it back up and I find myself emotionally upset and angered again. She said, it's hard to just totally let it go. Well, it is in some cases, but there's a process whereby that has to take place. And it's something that we should understand because ultimately we can think that the anger is toward the individual. But ultimately, the one who controls all individuals, the one who has all power in the universe, and the one who directs our life as we know it, is God. At some point, that anger and that needle kind of turns right toward God, and that's where we put ourselves at risk. Revelation 12 shows prophecy here in reference to Satan. Verse 13, just breaking into the middle of this passage, says, when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. My point is not to try to walk through the prophetic passage and identify and explain all of the symbols and the timing, but my point is, what is it then that takes place? So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. The earth helped the woman. The earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And verse 17, and the dragon was enraged with the woman. Imagine Satan not just being upset and not just being angry, but absolutely enraged at his power and his authority, which is only by permission of God, because he can only do what he's allowed. It says, the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus. Now think about that. It says that Satan's enraged with the woman being the church, at least in some form there. So that has to be true. But who is he really enraged with? Who is it that protects the woman? Who is it the woman can go to for forgiveness? Who is it that directs and has the power of the universe and restrains Satan? It is God. Satan ultimately is enraged at God, because that's how it works. Everything in between us and God is kind of a stepping stone, maybe, in our own mind. But the reality is, if we remain angry, at some point the outlet for that is going to go beyond the immediate target and is going to move toward the one who has all power and all authority, because it's God who has allowed these things to take place. And when we harbor that, eventually it impacts our relationship with God. When we hold on to the anger, we are actually holding on to the attitude of Satan himself. When we can't let it go, when we can't process it, when we can't walk through those things. God shows us what is good. Gail just went through some of those things, what to look at, how we should be armored, how we should be protected. We're to think about the good things that God points out should be on our mind. Sometimes, though, our mind fills up with things that are not good. It takes me time. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I wake up and I begin to process something that bothers me. And after, it takes me a while to recognize, excuse me, this is not actually taking place. No, this is something that my mind has had kind of inserted into it, and so I begin to feed off of it. And at some point, it has to be a conscious choice to let it go. As I've said before many times, you come up to the stop sign, you don't stop necessarily because you feel like it. You don't stop because necessarily you want to. You stop because you have to. You could get killed. You could hurt someone else. Forgiveness is the same way. We don't generally forgive because we want to or because it feels good. We forgive because we know we must. You make a choice. The heart follows the mind. You make a choice with your mind, the heart follows. Those are choices. Those are conscious things. But I find myself, something is fed into my mind, and maybe I cook it up on my own. There's no way always to tell. And I begin to follow that train of thought, and it begins to kind of swell up a little bit and expand. And it takes a while sometimes to stop and recognize this is not good. God did not do that. I am listening to the wrong voices. But in the course of that, because Satan is angry with God, he feels that God is not just, he's not fair, and that God is not right. Satan feels that he's right and that he deserves his power and authority. So at some point in time, if our focus turns from the intermediate object and ultimately gets to where we look at God and begin to question God, that's what Satan would have us to do. That is his mind. That's where he is. Interesting process. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross years ago wrote a book on death and dying. That material in her book has almost become part of our culture, because she addressed five stages of grieving and grief and what we walk through. And we actually have referenced some of that. I think I've, well, there you go. I'm not even going to chase it. It's in my briefcase. It fell out. In our book on, if the title is What Happens After Death, basically we quote in anger, the section under anger, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And we quote some of the references in the stage that she spoke about going through. But let me tell you what the stages are. Stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. And I think generically, I would agree with that. I think those are reasonably accurate. And like I said, she crystallized it in a way that even socially that became almost part of the conversation. And again, her book was written quite a number of years ago. So if you start with denial, I don't believe this is happening to me. Or this, I'm going to wake up and it's going to be okay. And you wake up and it's not okay. And then you move into anger. And you begin to process anger at the injustice or at the pain or at the inconvenience or the frustration, the lack of control. And then we get into bargaining. God, take this away. Take this away. I'll do whatever you want. I don't know what lesson I'm supposed to learn, but I hope I learn it. And we begin to bargain in that sense on, well, let's see if we can talk our way out of this one. And if we don't receive the results of the bargain, then we get depressed. Depression is the beginning stages of a less degree of hope as we begin to say, you know what, it is here. I am upset. That didn't work. Tried to work my way out of it and bargain, and I'm not able to gain on it, and now I'm stuck and there's a depression. If you walk through the depression, ideally you come to acceptance and you walk out the other end. So it's normal to feel sad when you have loss. It's normal to recognize the pain when you suffer. It's normal to know that the frustration is what we would have to deal with in the course of some, again, loss or injury or disability in some way. You have to walk in the door to the anger, not to hold on to it, but passing through, recognizing this human frame and flesh, and you have to walk into the emotional acceptance of where you are in order to walk out. There are people who simply never recognize the pain. Some traumatic thing happens and it's like they just ignore it. They never process it. You can't walk around it. You walk through it. But you walk out of it. But what happens is sometimes people go to denial, then they go to anger, then they go to bargaining, then they go to depression, and then they go back to anger, and they go to bargaining and depression and back to anger, and it's a closed loop on the inside of where you never heal. And that is a very, very destructive process. When I had my heart attack 4 years ago, four. It was interesting sitting in the intensive care part of the hospital, and the nurse's station was right across the hall. You know, when they're kind of concerned about somebody, where do they put them? Right next to the nurse's station. So I was sitting, and I was acting uncharacteristic to the nurses. I was right across from the nurse's station. I came in, had a heart attack on Tuesday, and they air-flighted me in. First there was a ride to the dispensary, then there was an ambulance to the hospital, then there was an air flight to the coronary unit of another hospital in another city. And I was sitting in my bed with a pair of tropical khaki pants on, which was my backpacking pants, that had blood on them because they had spilled a bit on the IVs as they were working with me in various places. And I had no shirt on because they had to take off my shirt to put in the IVs. And they hand you a thing that, you know, a robe for the hospital, and I just left it there. And I just sat there for like a day on the bed, not really moving, kind of staring at the wall with no shirt, blood on my pants, didn't care. And the nurse finally came in like on the second day. She says, you know, you're a little unusual. she said, it's kind of strange that you're just sitting there. And, you know, if someone walks in the door, I could greet him. I wasn't uncivil or anything. I didn't give a death stare like Michael Phelps or what his name was in the swimming Olympics. You know, I wasn't like that. But I just sitting there in my own little envelope all by myself. Michelle hadn't arrived yet. She came in the next day or so. And I didn't care if I had a shirt on or not. And I didn't care if the blinds are open or not, who came and went or not. I just sat there. And what I was doing is I was processing denial and trying to get to acceptance. And I preferred to skip the anger and the bargaining and the depression. I didn't want the middle pieces. There was no anger. There might have been a little depression, but honestly, I was trying to just skip those steps. So I went from denial to acceptance, sitting in a hospital, processing in my own little bubble, constantly running through my mind, there goes mountaineering, there goes rock climbing, there goes my lifestyle, there goes these things that I do, here's where I'm going to be now, here's where I am, what's going to be left. And I did that just sitting on that bed. And you know what? I came out at acceptance of that hospital. Heart attack on Tuesday, surgery on Wednesday, drove back to the Challenger program on Thursday. We stayed there into the weekend, drove here home to Spokane. Within 2 weeks, we were in Nigeria at the youth camp, setting up tents on the beach. That just literally, my effort and goal was to get from denial to acceptance and skip all the steps in between. And mentally, I just had to sit there until I could accept what had happened and then say, all right, it's okay. This is what it is, and just let the rest go. Now, you know how we do that spiritually? You do that with forgiveness. You go from the offense, and you can literally go straight to forgiveness. You do not have to go through anger or denial. How could they do that to me? You do not have to go through depression. I'm not saying we won't. All I'm saying is there is access to go from the injury straight to forgiveness by God's Spirit working in us. I sat in the bed working my mind, choosing acceptance, denying denial. I had to choose it. It happened. My heart followed my mind. We can choose to forgive. And maybe it was a moment you choose it doesn't take place. Fine. Choose it again the next moment. Choose it again the moment after that. Keep choosing it until it does happen. It can. By God's Spirit, it will. And what you'll find is there is no anger with God. You've come to acceptance. Your life has changed. Your circumstances have changed. We should live this life, should I say, without regret. But there's so much to regret. There's so much that can go wrong. There's so many things that if they wouldn't have happened, then we'd be somewhere else or something would be better. Well, that's just like denial. And that's just like anger. And that's just like depression. It did happen. It has happened. It is over. Let it go, as we get from Mike Imes, famously, let it go. I've said this before. We had children who were young, who were teenagers, and Michelle was ill. I left them behind, and Michelle as well, with the responsibilities of the family when she was ill, and I went overseas. And I did it again and again and again, because God has children in Africa, not just children in my family, and he's not quite as partial to my children as I am and as Michelle is, because his children are everywhere, and he cares for all of his children. So I had four words for our children. Forgive me for being so direct. I know that's uncharacteristic. Four words for our children. I've told them, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's it. I did my best. Did I do it right? Certainly not. It's over. I did what I could at the time. I really did. So at some point, we need to live in this present, have hope for the future. Passover, and you've heard me say it. Yesterday's gone, tomorrow never comes. This is what we have today. Live today, now. Live your life without regret. You know what regret is? Coulda, woulda, should've. It's a big ball and chain, hangs around our leg. We drag it down the street, and it slows us down for the rest of our life. Regret, it is over. So it's not like I look back at my life and say, yeah, I did great. No, I did the best I could. I generally did. And when God showed me my fault and error dramatically, I asked him to forgive me. And if he forgave me, then you know what? At some point in time, I better let go of the ball and chain myself. The anger will not heal anything. You have to walk in and walk out and get out of it as quick as you can so that it does not become a root of bitterness, a weed that you cannot pull up. That was a great analogy. If you can pull it up, it's a plant. Yeah. Well, bitterness is called a root of bitterness, and it's like a weed in our lives, and you know what? It will choke us to death. And you're going to have a hard time getting it out if you let it grow. So you walk out of the bargaining as quick as possible. You walk out of the depression as quick as possible. You do not settle in depression because you say, I deserve to be depressed. No, you don't deserve to be depressed. You deserve God's grace and mercy if we repent. And that's what we should reach for. Reach for acceptance. Reach for it. Sometimes, in the course of counseling, people have told me, when someone starts to tell me that they've already addressed that in their life, that's like, then why are you telling me? The honest answer is, when someone starts to tell me that they've already addressed something in life, it's usually a little bit of a flag saying, no, it's still there. Because if it's gone, then it's over, and it doesn't come to mind. If it keeps coming to mind, it's still there. So sometimes we hold on to things because we're comfortable with what we're used to, but what we're used to is not good. And we need to walk in, walk out. Get through the process. The process is fairly natural and normal in this flesh. But again, go from acceptance and make that forgiveness. Reach for the forgiveness. Psalm 30, verse number 4. It says, sing praise to the Lord, you saints of his. Give thanks at the remembrance of his holy name. For his anger is but for a moment, his favor is for life. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. This life seems like eternity in the flesh. But in eternity, this life is just going to be a little tiny spot on the screen. Our perspective is going to change. God is in eternity. He is eternal, and he looks at this different than we. And so we say, well, why can't you come in on your horse with the Calvary today? Well, again, God sees it from a broader perspective. God's anger is but for a moment for our good. His favor is for life. In fact, for eternity. Psalm 37, going forward just a little bit, verse number 7. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass, sometimes against us, obviously. Cease from anger. Get in, get out, get on your way. Forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. For evildoers shall be cut off. Those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. The earth abides forever, is what the Bible says. And yet for a little while, and the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you will look diligently for his place, and it shall be no more. But the meek will inherit the earth, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. And the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. We will have that for eternity. It's hard in the flesh not to focus on the flesh. So I think we live here in this box, in this suit. But this is temporary. Abide in it, but process and get to forgiveness. Choose forgiveness. And think about it as long as it takes to focus so that your mind actually settles in that place. If you wait till you feel like it, you won't. And it won't happen. I didn't feel like not mountain climbing anymore. I didn't feel like being cut off from wilderness expedition anymore. I didn't feel like that. I had to recognize that to the degree it took place. 1 Samuel 1, Hannah. Got this written out a little longer. I don't want to read the whole passage. But 1 Samuel 1, verse 8, Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? This man, verse 3, went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Who's the Lord of hosts? The Lord of hosts is the Father. Of course it is. That's where you go to the house of God to worship God. And you go up to Shiloh, where that was established, to worship the Lord of hosts. He went up every year. Verse 3. Hannah was very, very unhappy. Verse 8. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. She made a vow and said, Lord of hosts, we're going to bargain now. If you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I'll give him to the Lord all the days of his life and no razor shall come on his head. She's going to give the child up, effectively give the child over when he's ready to be raised in the temple. And it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli watched her mouth. Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved. Her voice was not heard, therefore Eli thought she was drunk. Eli said to her, how long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you. Hannah answered, says, no, my Lord. I'm a woman of sorrowful spirit. I've drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but I've poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, or out of abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now. And Eli answered, said, go in peace. And the God of Israel grant your petition, which you have asked of him. And she said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. The woman went her way, ate, and her face was no longer sad. There are times when you pray to God, and God answers your prayer in the affirmative and actually responds and gives us what we desire. There are times when he heals us. There are times when he protects us and delivers us, and he does it in many, many ways, and he does it often. But there are times, from our perspective, when he does not. And that does not mean that we should not come to acceptance. or that we should not come to forgiveness. We don't have to do that until God gives us what we want. If that's our approach, you will stay in the depression, you will go back to the anger, and you'll begin to cycle through the midst of those five steps. That is a very unhealthy thing to do. When we were married, let me put it this way, Michelle wanted children. Hope my children aren't listening. I'll be married. I'm happy. She said, no, we have to have a child. So it took a while to get a child. Things didn't work the way that we thought it would, just kind of autopilot. It took about 7 years. That was 7 years of every month, generally speaking, some tears. And every month, basically, some stress. And every month, some struggle. In various ways. It's a long story. Before God gave us a child, literally, Michelle came to acceptance. Michelle got there first. Now, the reason he didn't give us a child, as it turned out, we believe, is because of me, and I've told the story of Brad, my son, whom I had never accepted. He graduated from high school. I had never met him. His mother sent a graduation card to my parents' address, who still lived in the same house. That was forwarded to me. I showed it to Michelle. We decided to send him a gift. He sent back a thank you. We considered that an opening and determined that we would travel back to Oregon, and if he would allow a relationship, we would accept him as our firstborn son. And then she got pregnant. Like that week she was pregnant. So that's not coincidence. That's not just finally learning to relax. You know, it's not finally getting enough strawberry tea. That's not what that is. That's acceptance. And God's blessing came through and gave us a child. And then Michelle said, no, one's not enough. You got to have two. They got to fight with each other at least, you know. And so we had two. And I said, all right, we good now? She said, we're good. So that's as far as it went. But the fact is, the acceptance had to come, in this case, first. Now, what God would have done or not done, I don't know. That's his choice. He doesn't tell us all those things. But we can't wait until our problem is resolved in order to feel accepting. We have to choose to be accepting. We have to choose to forgive. We have to choose to heal. God, then, is not encumbered by our incessant complaint and our frustration and anger, which can turn into bitterness, which could cost us our salvation. Actually, God's not encumbered anyway. But we should not suppose that somehow he is required to respond in some way. That's idolatry. That's what they did to the idols. They offered their child on the altar to compel the pagan god to respond. They offered offerings and sacrifices and cut themselves with knives and bled to make that pagan god respond. That was the belief. When we start thinking of, well, you know, God, you've just got to do this, that's simply not what God has called us to. When you go to the book of Job and you watch, read, what Job went through, you know, it was God who said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Oh, really? Watch this. You know, it's like, God, I'd like to be friends, but not that close of friends. Okay? Let's not have you pointing out, what do you think about, you know, what do you think about Paul? Pray for adventure. Well, okay, Darla's now mad at me, so. But look at Job. Let's go to Job. I just want to go to verse 20 of chapter 1. Break. I think we've all read through this. We're familiar with it. But I want to go to verse 20, chapter 1. After all this loss and struggle and the loss of family and destruction that took place all around him, it says, Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and he worshiped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. You know, I've heard people say, yeah, Job was self-righteous. Job is miles ahead of any of us. And he always was. For us to even imagine somehow that he had this great lesson to learn, he did before God. But believe me, we're not here. We if all of this happened, how many of us would bow down and begin to worship God and make this statement? The Lord gave, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. That's actually a pretty high standard. Go over to Job 40 then, after all of this plays out, and the deeper lesson is evident. But Job 40, verse 1 says, "Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said," notice God's comment, "shall the one who contends with the Almighty God correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it. And Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I'm vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I've spoken, but I will not answer. Yes, twice I will proceed no further." Job pulled back very quickly and clearly when he recognized his position. And God says, "Are you going to challenge me?" When we get angry with God, we challenge him. We confront him. We begin to contend with God in a way that, quite frankly, is not only not profitable, it is not healthy. We walk into anger, we need to recognize it, and we need to cycle through it very quickly and walk out. Not hold on to it, not justify it, not nurture ourselves in it. You know, I was young, and I would have a crush on a girl, and she would dump me, which was pretty common. What I figured out very quickly is if I hated her, I felt better. I just hated not missing the fact that she liked me and she dumped me, but I found if I hated her, I got over it. Sometimes we learn the wrong lesson. Sometimes we learn the wrong lesson. We hold on to things that, quite frankly, are not for our good. Anger is not something that we keep. It's something that we walk out of and away from as soon as possible. When we seek repentance, understanding, when we seek faith and strength, when we desire submission rather than to have our own way, then anger will not take root and no bitterness will result. We should not be contending with God. He's perfect. His ways are higher than our ways. He sees what we don't see, and our faith recognizes that. Sometimes in the process of going through struggle or trial, our mind begins to look at the present. And we need to step back and walk out of it, but we need to consciously move toward acceptance. Even if you're in prison, if you're Joseph, if you're Daniel, you get to acceptance, and you get there as fast as possible. And the way you do that spiritually is you move to forgiveness, and you go there as quick as you can. And you make it stick. You continue to set your mind until it takes place by the power of God's Spirit. That process will be complete. And you will live this life without regret. I know that sounds strange. I deserve to have regrets. No, you don't. We should try to be healthy spiritually. That's what it means to put God first. And to walk away from all of the disability that would trail and follow us and hang on to us if it could.